Welcome to the Natural Running Network. We are brought to you by Mio, makers of the world's first strapless heart rate monitor sports watches, and MedHab, makers of RPM Squared, an innovative system of gait analysis that slips right into your running shoes. My name is Richard Diaz. I am your host. Are you a runner? Do you love to get out and challenge yourself? Running your first marathon or maybe caught the bug of obstacle racing? Well, sit tight because this is a show you just don't want to miss. Hey, this is Richard Diaz, and I wanted to share this episode, which is one of our very first podcasts. We're in the midst of migrating past shows to our new site, thenaturalrunningnetwork.com. If you are new to us, come to us via iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever your favorite podcast provider. I encourage you to visit our new site and subscribe to our shows. Our plan is to share great content and perks for our fans. I hope you enjoyed this classic episode as much as I did bringing it to you.
Good morning to Erica. Erica, I haven't talked to you in a while. You've been good? Everything cool?
I know. All is good. All is good.
Lots of stuff going on right now. We'll get a chance to catch up after the show.
Great.
I have to tell you that I'm very, very excited about the show today. We have got an interview that, it's going to be a tough one to top. It really is. We're going to be interviewing Gilbert Tuabunye. He's an African, and he has written a few books about his life coming up in Africa, and he is a middle-distance runner that is actually coaching runners in Texas now. And, you know, I followed his books. I have to say that I haven't had a chance to completely read them, but what an interesting story this guy has. I mean, he basically narrowly escaped an uprising that occurred in Burundi where they burned and killed and macheted all of his tribe friends in school. And he was the only one that escaped. He was set afire, beaten, narrowly killed, got out a window, and ran for his life. And the end of the story basically is he is alive and well, living in Texas, and he's coaching runners. And it's just a fascinating story. He's a national caliber runner. He is the stuff of dreams when we speak of African runners. He is that guy. I'm reading in his book here where coming up as a 10-year-old boy, chasing down antelope on foot with his father and to hunt for meat with a spear. And when you talk about the greatness of these African runners, this is where it stems from. This is where it all comes from. The passion for their running all comes from essentially the way they were raised. And it's just going to be a fascinating opportunity for us to share his story with the world here. And again, I'm just beside myself with excitement over the opportunity.
I absolutely agree. And you know, you're talking about the passion of running. I think, like you say, in that lifestyle, in that culture, that is the true circle of life right there. You know, if you don't catch that antelope or whatever it is you're running down, probably not going to eat that night, right? So I think...
No, it's interesting. I know so little about this culture. Obviously, I've spent a lot of time studying the way they run and you know, how they have become these just incredible runners. But the backstory on the way they live day to day, you know, I'm reading about him as a young boy. Every morning their deal is to go down the mountain to get water, and his mother would carry this heavy clay pot on her head with water. You know, I haven't really gotten to understand yet what it possibly weighed or whether he even concerned himself with the weight of it.
Right.
Going back up the mountain every day with his pot of water on her head. And I'm reading about as a young boy how he enjoyed sliding down the mountainside on a banana leaf. The pride of his life was to finally be awarded the opportunity to carry the water back up the mountain himself. And because he enjoyed, you know, playing on the mountain so much that he, you know, to make up the time so his mother wouldn't find out he was messing around, he ended up running up the mountain with this clay pot full of water on top of his head. And this pot is a very cherished device in their household.
Okay.
And to break it would be tantamount of disaster. I mean, then that means no water for a while until they get another pot. So he was basically risking a beating from his mother or his parents had he broke that pot, and at the same time feeling like, you know, he's basically doing wind sprints up the mountain with a clay pot. So I don't know when the last time you had a chance to run with a clay pot on your head.
No.
But if you decide to try that, would you please let me know? Because definitely want to be there to film it.
I carry my water in my camel pack right now. No clay pots for me.
But complain about the weight.
Right. I know. You know,
it looks like I've got him on the line, so I'm going to leave you for a second so I can chat with him real quickly in the green room, and then we'll bring him on.
So here are my thoughts listening to Richard is the clay pot thing. It sounds like it was maybe a coming-of-age thing, too, that if he was looking so forward to getting that task, maybe, if he was handed that at a certain age to help his mom out. You know, I could go on so many things about the little I know about the culture there, but it's the way things, I think, should be. I can't wait to get him on air. It's not only a survivor story, but as Richard and I were chatting before, it's a survivor story, but he has thrived after his I don't want to say ordeal. It's too traumatic to even put words to, but the little bit that I have heard of his story.
Erica.
Yes.
Not to cut you off, I have Gilbert Tuhabonye. Is that right, Gilbert? Did I do it right?
That's correct.
Gilbert, I want to introduce you to Erica, and I'd like to welcome you to our show.
Good morning, Erica.
Good morning. An absolute pleasure to have you on with us. Thank you for making the time to share your story.
Thank you for having me.
So, Gilbert, I want to get right after it because, you know, I'm sure that we could burn the clock for hours and hours talking, but we are limited with the amount of time we do have, so I want to get right into it. And if you know, I want you to only do what you're comfortable doing, but I would really love if you could just provide some backstory on, you know, how you came to us and, you know, the trouble that you're facing and, you know, the whole thing, just as quickly and as concisely as you possibly can.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to tell you my background before the horrible massacre. I was born in Burundi, in a small country, and growing up, I didn't have all these privileges that American had. My daily routine would be getting up in the morning, and I would walk 6 miles to school. And before I do that, I would have to go fetch the water for my family so they can cook while I'm in the school. And I would stay at the school for, you know, from 8 to 5 o'clock. And then at 5 o'clock, I would go home. And then it would be also again to fetch water. You're talking about walking 2 miles. 1 mile down and 1 mile up with the jug of water at the top of my head. And then it will be a time to, you know, to go guide the cows. And I did that through sixth grade. And then seventh grade, that's where I was separated by my parents. I went to a boarding school in seventh grade. And when I was in seventh grade, I won a race. It was 5 miles that the school was trying to select a team to do cross country. When I won the race, and I remember, and this word started talking to me every time I'm about to do a race, a coach came up to me and he said, "Son, you can be the best, not only here, but all over the world." To me, I didn't have a TV, I didn't have an internet, I didn't have a computer. The world to me was the school, and I just won that 5 miles. Then, 1993, October the 21st, the day that I will ever forget in my entire life, that day, I thought it was going to be a normal day, but it wasn't. The Hutu president was assassinated by extremist Tutsis. And in act of retaliation, the Hutu came to my school. They locked every Tuesday they could find, teacher, student. It was a very, very sad moment. I witnessed my friends dying one by one, and I was waiting for my turn. But before we get inside the building, we were roped together in a death march, marching towards a place. It was a gas station. It was a place they had chosen so they can burn everyone. And then before you get inside the building, we were stripped naked. We didn't have any clothes. And then we spray gasoline on our body. So, and then they will make sure that before you enter the building, they hit you on the neck. So you're kind of paralyzed. Right at the entrance, there was this kid. His dad was a general in the army. He didn't want to get inside the building. And they started chopping him in two pieces, and I got a chance to jump inside the building before they can hit me on my neck. And when I got inside the building, the room was full. You're talking about a couple hundred. The room was full of innocent teachers, students, and then they burned the building. That's really when I witnessed all my friends dying and there's nothing I can do. I spent 8 hours in that burning building praying to God, asking for help. I almost killed myself. I tried to suicide myself, but the voice kept telling me that I'll be okay. I didn't know what was talking to me, but the voice was really strong. The voice was telling me that I'll be okay. Finally, I took a dead body. I didn't have a choice. I broke the window and I jumped. And when I landed outside, my friends, these people were waiting for me. They were chanting, they were celebrating the massacre. And when I jumped and landed in the midst of them. They did not see me. Up to today, I called a miracle. Then I ran. And I was running, they were chasing me. It was dark. They couldn't see me. But I was badly burned. I couldn't move. I lost 30% of my body. And as I was trying to escape, everything got tight. It was almost 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was going to a hospital nearby, because my idea was, I didn't know when I would receive help. I was going to find some medicine to clean up the wounds so I don't get infected. And then that's when I had the soldiers, luckily they were Tutsis, and some of them knew who I was and transferred me to a hospital where I spent 3 months in the hospital. And in those 3 months in the hospital, I was really, really angry. I couldn't understand how in the world these people tried to kill me, and now I am alive. I couldn't put together, because some of those were my friends. Some of those were my teammates in 4x4 on any time we do relays. And I was also in the drumming team. Some of them were also in that team. I couldn't put together. I was really, really angry. But I started reading the Bible, and I came up to a conclusion, forgiveness. Forgive those people trying to kill me, and so I can move on. It was not easy until I found running. And to me, running is my therapy. Running is a joy. Running is a freedom. Running is the vehicle that connected me to all the blessings that I have in my life. Really, because of that, I was able to find a joy. And then 1996, I came here, I was supposed to run in Olympics, but I didn't quite make the standard. So I was there watching. It transreflected my life, how lucky I am to be alive and be in this beautiful country. But I have to tell you one thing. When I was in the hospital, I received a message of hope. It was a school from here in the United States, from Tulane University. It was inviting me to run on a full scholarship. Because before all this thing happened, I was the I was a national champion 800 and 400, so there was, you know, some scholarship line up here in the state. But I didn't know what happened. And that was the message of the hope. I remember going crazy because someone just believed that I can do it. I was going to give up. And luckily, I am here. I live in Austin, a beautiful town. And I love coaching people. I still run a little bit. And that's probably where we are today.
So, Gilbert, you're if I'm not mistaken, you're about 38 years old now?
Correct.
Okay. And so you were offered a scholarship. That's basically how you came to this country, correct?
No, I came to this country. Yes, there was an offer for a scholarship, but I came here as I was really, really close to making the standard for the Olympics 1996. So the country sent me to train LaGrange, Georgia. I came here in April to get ready to make the standard. I had like a 2 to 3 months to make the standard for the Olympics, but I didn't make it because I never run fast in Georgia.
First of all, you know, it's such a powerful story, and as I'm quite sure you're familiar, that, you know, we just had quite a tragedy in Connecticut recently, and by no means did I connect these two stories other than just by coincidence, but I'm sure that you believe that there was a greater calling for you, and that's why you're here now. And, you know, I'm kind of getting all over the map here, but I know you've also developed a foundation to generate fresh water back in Africa, and we're going to get to that in a little bit. But, you know, look at all the good you're able to do now since you survived. It's just, you know, it's just such an amazing story.
Yeah, I have to attribute everything to running, and also for God for allowing me to move forward in my life. Because really, if it wasn't forgiveness, you know how we all struggle in our lives. We all struggle, different struggle. As you said, when I was watching the news about this shoot, these kids, innocent kids that died, it kind of reflect to what happened to me. Because I know, I remember when I was told that that my parents thought I was dead, because they started doing the funeral, because they didn't know. They said every child at Kivimba, my high school, that it was dead. So they started doing the funeral. And watching the news, it's kind of like flashback for me, because it's a similar. It's a really, it's a sad situation. It's a, as you said, by no means to be a coincidence. It just shows how powerful God is, and how I was spared for a moment, and that's probably what I do, what I'm doing right now.
So, you know, on a lighter note, and you know, I was trying to bite my lip before I asked this, because in consequence, relative to what you spoke of, it really doesn't matter. But the burning question I have for you, and I hope you find this funny, is that to carry this pot on your head as you're running 1 mile uphill, how much did that pot weigh?
I don't know, man. you know, so I'll tell you a story also. What happened was, like, my parents would say, okay, we want to make, like, beer. We made our beer back home. And the water, you had to go fish down in the valley. Sometimes they would be like, we want to make 50 gallons. You have to go as many as many as you can. Sometimes I would take a bigger one so I don't have to go many times. So,
but so
20 liters, 10 liters, you graduated. You know, they have, I don't know if you've seen some of those pots. Some are small, some are medium, some are big. I remember killing myself to take a big one so I don't have to go that many.
But you could actually run with this pot on your head?
No, it was running down to get the water. After that, no, you can't run. You can go fast. You can walk fast. you can walk fast, but you cannot run because the water will be moving around.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
So some of these endurance athletes doing these ultras could take a lesson from you, Gilbert, as to how to walk up a hill quickly.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing what I wish you guys you would see how these kids, they do that with joy too. They do with joy. I bet if I tell my children to go get the water, they would be whining. But
yeah.
these kids, they do with joy.
So I'm reading your book right now, The Voice in Your Heart, and you know I've been away and traveling and things like this lately, so I really haven't had a chance, and I apologize for you know, the bits and pieces I've actually had a chance to read so far. But I read that as a young boy, you would hunt with your father for antelope with a spear. And it draws me back to a few of the things that I read in the research that Chris McDougall did with Born to Run, where he spoke of how these African tribesmen would essentially run the antelopes or their prey down to exhaustion so that they can get close enough to kill them with a spear or what have you. So you actually have done that, correct?
Yes. You know what? When people here go, oh, I went hunting, and they take guns, that's cheating, man. And then, look, we live on this top of the mountain, and the way they would do it, you hear noise. It was always Saturday morning or Sunday morning. You hear noise, you're like, you know that's an animal coming. You just got out from your house, and you see people chasing an animal, and you join the group. This animal has probably been running for a couple miles. They're tired. And then sometimes this animal, they will hide under the or jump in the water because they're tired, and you just go and man, we did it by arrows, we did it by stick, we did it by no gun. I did it.
So, but you could you know, the sound you made, that's a communication signal between the hunters, right? They let
yes.
you know that something's coming, right?
Yeah, there's no whistle, there's nothing. You use your inside voice to alert everyone. You see the animal, you're trying to show them, and they are running everywhere. You just go, they heard you, man, that's it. And everybody comes, and it's fun, it was fun. And then remember, I think it was my, the fun part of hunting, because you get a chance to run chasing an animal. You see they're jumping. You think about a gazelle, they're jumping, and you follow them. But they've been running for long. They're kind of tired. You're getting closer to them. It was just, like, incredible, man. It was, yeah.
So, but you, now, you obviously were running barefoot.
Yes.
Yes. So that, I mean.
Of course, Richard.
So coming up, you know, as a young boy going to school every day and all the things that you did, running back and forth, you did this pretty much barefoot most of the time?
Yes, I think I remember my first pair of shoes, it was when I was going to middle school. Like when I passed the national test, you know, you got to wear the shoes because the school required to wear the shoes. But elementary school, no shoes, man, no. You would be able to find in the book when I first wore my first shoes, even when I went to the market, there was a tons of great selection, and you'll be surprised what kind of shoes that I got.
So did you, when you were training in your running, were you wearing shoes, or did you do a lot of the running barefoot?
My first race that I won, it was barefoot, the 5 miles.
Okay.
It was barefoot, and also training. I felt comfortable running barefoot versus shoes, because the shoes we get, remember, the shoes we get in Africa, it's very hard to come up to a brand new. It was always secondhand.
Right.
Used, you know, like the shoes you use, like 350 miles and you send to us, those are the shoes we used. So it was always fun to run barefoot. I felt that it was more natural. But when I moved here, because we keep running barefoot was some strange when I was 96.
Right.
And I started wearing shoes and I started coming up with injuries. That I never had Achilles. I never had Achilles before. So here's a story.
Well, yeah, no, and we, just to give you a little bit about us, I have this thing that we refer to as the natural running network. And what we do when we coach people is we try to get them to engage the ground, to let their feet feel the ground. And we don't teach them to run barefoot because, you know, we're sissies. Our feet are not trained from you know, young to old, where we, you know, we're toughened up enough to take it. So for someone 40 years old to decide, okay, because Gilbert says take my shoes off, I'll go take my shoes off and run like he did, they're going to hurt themselves because their feet are too weak. But we do believe that getting away from shoes that impede signal to the body is very, very important, and to learn how to run more in a neutral format rather than a shoe with a heavy heel. And
I agree.
I'm assuming that you're probably, you know, just intuitively, that's kind of how you roll, right?
Yes, I agree 100% with you. I think, as I was telling you earlier, lifestyle, you see all those guys in the Kenyan and the Ethiopian and Moroccans growing up, they do a lot of barefoot, and even the shoes they wear, if you look at those races, it's like really don't have anything, no cushion. And as you were saying, it's very difficult here. You have to treat this, what I call our runners, different, because you can't take someone 40 years old and then change all of a sudden. You got to walk slowly. You know, dropping, moving from heavy shoes all the way to minimal. But it has to be a good plan and not just, it doesn't happen overnight.
Right.
So I am with you. I agree with you.
So now, Gilbert, you do a lot of coaching now, right? I mean, that's your life right now, right?
Yes, I enjoy coaching because to me, I lost the competition eager. I used to compete until probably 4 years ago. Right now, I find the joy coaching people. It is such a rewarding, what I call, experience when you help someone qualify for Boston, for example. Like someone never thought would qualify for Boston, you give them a path and a plan to qualify for Boston. It's such a rewarding. And also, I coached some high school, St. Andrew's Episcopal High School here in Austin. We won 5 championships in the cross country. And, you know, when I first started, they didn't even have a team. Right now, the cross country itself, boys and girls, we have 65 kids out of 300 kids run cross country. And there's no such rewarding to see a 5 championship, but coming home to a school never known for, you know, for nothing to be 5 times. So I enjoy coaching adults. I enjoy coaching kids. I enjoy coaching, period. It's just a great way to give back to the community.
So let me ask you, what is the favorite message you have when you meet a new runner and you're trying to help them with their running? What is the go-to information you like to deliver?
When I coach someone, first I have to make them feel comfortable. Some people, especially beginners, they feel intimidated by me. When they read the bio about me, what I've done, and they get intimidated. So I put them in a comfort level to trust me, to believe in me. And then, I don't know if you've heard, I'm also a funny person. I'm a funny person.
I've seen your videos.
What?
I've seen your videos coaching. Yeah, you're pretty hilarious.
Thank you. I make it fun. I try to make it fun. And I like to inspire. And I put in myself, in my head, what these people are looking for. You know, I have a paper they fill out, so I know what they are looking for. And once I know what they are looking for, it's very easy. I inspire runner to do their best. I use a positive feedback. So everything that I do is, I have to know my athletes where they are. In terms of how fast they're running, if they're improving, if they're not improving. I also have, on the weekends, every Friday, I host like one-on-one kind of a feedback time where I spend the time with a runner to learn their weakness and help them get stronger and believe in themselves. Most of people don't believe themselves, and I make them believe themselves. It's really powerful to trust your runner, to believe in your runner, and then once they know the coach believes them and trusts them, yeah, they go crazy. So they run incredible times. Really, I inspire runners to do the best they can.
My guess is, and I see, like I said, I saw some of your videos on YouTube, and I see you work with them on the infield of the, you know, like a soccer field or a football field, and you do a lot of technique work. You teach them, you know, proper mechanics, which is, I feel, very, very important, especially for new runners, and especially for those that started out running on their heels. Do you spend time trying to help these runners get off their heels?
Yes. What I do in terms of the first day, it's always to learn what muscle doesn't work. As you know, and also being a coach, there is no universal running style. We help runner learn how to be comfortable with their running, how to prevent them from getting injured. I spend a lot of time working on the drills, especially developing the muscle we ever use by running, such as the, you know, the knee, the quads, the back, the calves, and make sure the athletes have a strong feet, because the power, if they lose anything, just think about, if you don't have, if you have a problem, just a toenail problem, it can trigger your biomechanics. I make sure that the number one they do, they make sure they have a strong feet. And then make sure that range of motion, maybe you've seen us doing some of the drills to help them with range of motion. And then help them to avoid being tensing up while they run, because most people are tense. I guess it's the work and who knows. So when they're running, it's natural. When they're running, they're getting more air. When they're running, it's more fun. So really, I spend a lot of time developing those muscles I've used by running. And before you know it, runners are hooked, and they can go longer, and they run, you know, fast time.
Do you teach them to sing?
Yes. Yes, man. You wanna hear some?
I really do. You know what? I'm telling you, I listened to your video, and I make jokes about trying to be able to do the songs you do, because I don't know how to do it. But I mean,
well, one
to
is,
find the rhythm, right? You got to find rhythm in your running.
Yes, you do. Like my cousin Bernard, who lives here. When we go run, we sing, because also we speak the same language. It's so fun. We can cover 7 to 10 miles, and even before you know it, we are attacking one another in the song. It's fun.
One of the songs you do, I think it was you. It's got to do with the lion can't catch you. Kind of. Is that you?
Young Way. Yes.
Yes. Can you give us like a little taste of it, and then explain what it means?
You want to sing?
Yeah, I want you to do it.
So I can hear. first we go. It's called Yungwe. Yungwe to your feet. Yungwe to your foot. Yungwe to your foot. Yungwe to your foot. Yungwe to your foot. Yungwe to your feet. Yungwe to your foot. Yungwe. 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 So.
That's awesome.
Love it. Love it. It's got great rhythm.
What does it mean?
It's like you pretend you've been chased by a lion, and then what I was saying was the lion is coming from behind. There's no way it's gonna catch me, and then it's in front. We gotta make sure that there's no way. So what are you trying to tell? It's motivate yourself. The lion is coming behind. It won't catch me. The lion is coming from front. He won't catch me. No way. I am stronger than a lion. I'm faster than a lion. Pretty much like that.
Do you have your runners actually sing with you?
Yes. They love it.
That's great.
They love it. They love it. It's awesome. And that's how we celebrate also our birthdays. So I make sure that every time there's someone's birthdays, we put that in the middle and they go, whoo, 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 so everybody can sing. It's fun. It's fun.
Hey, you know,
Richard,
I got an idea for you to make you $1,000,000. It'd be great for your foundation. you have to put that song on an audio tape
okay.
So people can listen to it through their iPad or iPod while they're running. And then they can sing it too, you know? You teach them.
I love it.
You know, us white people, and I shouldn't say white people when I'm speaking of me because I'm Cuban, so, you know, I guess I'm Hispanic. So, but anyway, white people have no rhythm. And you know, running is a rhythm thing, you know?
Yeah.
And the looser you are, the more comfortable you are, you move the rigidity away from your body, you're going to flow. You're going to have much more engagement with the ground and just much more effortless. And I'm sure that's how you grew up, right?
Yes. What happened was the coaches would say, hey, guys, today's recovery day. You have to run 45 minutes. He knew 45 minutes is like 7 miles, right?
Yeah.
So we started singing. Actually, one of the my favorite besides that, it was this one called Numarama. Numara, we have it, Numara, we have Rongore, Numarama, Numarama. So what it is, it means last forever. And this song, you can go over and over. And it's a song, it's about teasing one another. I would tease you, Richard. It is a time to get married, Richard, because when they make the pain, you are alive. When they create San Diego or your city where you are alive. So something that fun, so people can laugh and get keep engaged, and before you know it, the distance is over. And I remember one time we finished that run in 42 minutes, and the coach is like, I told you guys to run 45 minutes. So we were
recovery.
Fun. And really, I can go on and on.
But see, the recovery for you happened in 42 minutes, right?
Exactly.
Take 3 minutes.
Yeah, but yeah, we're supposed to run, it was 7 miles. We're supposed to run, 6:30, but we end up going fast because it's fun. It was fun because you don't focus. Again, this is not where here you tie up with a Garmin and high rate. No, you run using your inside voice. You run how you feel, not, driven by Garmin or this gadget that we have here.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of a gadget guy, but, I think probably the reason I'm a gadget guy is because I don't know how to sing.
And you didn't grow up in Africa, Richard.
No. You just want to know where you are. That's it.
Yeah. Well, the singing is cool, though. I'm telling you, if you put that in an audio track that people can download off the Internet, you're going to make $1,000,000,000. And you can use it to fortify your foundation. Can we talk about the Gazelle Foundation? I think I really want the audience to know what work you do and encourage them to help to support your efforts.
Yeah. So Gazelle Foundation, when I first wrote the book, I would go speak to places. I would go speak to elementary churches and so on. And one day I was running with my two friends, Peter Rauch and Paul Pugh. We were doing a 22 miles. And this guy, Paul, was just coming back from Ethiopia for Habitat for Humanity. And he suggested that we should start a foundation to help people in Burundi. Really, what a great idea. Then we started the foundation, and up to today, my friend, I can tell you that I'm so happy what the foundation is doing. We're able to provide more than 15,000 are getting clean water close to home. Mm-hmm. Remember the story that I told you, I used to get up and go get water 2 miles?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know how hard it is. Some of the students used to miss school because it was too much to get the water 3 miles out, and then to go to school 6. It was too much. And right now, by the way, I just got back last year, a year ago. I was in Burundi by this time of the year. I was visiting these projects that we've done, visiting this community that we served, and I came back with extra joy because these people were happy. Because their life has changed. These people are getting clean water to home. They don't have to walk distance to get water. Children, instead of spending hours and hours, they can go to school and become better educated. The hospital, the clinic that close by, people don't get sick. They don't get sick like they used to because they are drinking clean water. And women, they do all the work. That's the one, they fetch water when the kids are at school. They don't have to do that anymore. They can focus on the other activities. And water also has united people. The Hutu and Tutsis, when they're getting clean water coming from natural resources, they're sharing. They don't think about killing one another. They're thinking about maintaining and sharing more of this water, because when we go to places, we give the water based on the needs. It doesn't matter they are Hutu or Tutsi, every tribe, we're giving water to all these community without any tribe to differentiate any kind of tribes. We give the water based on the need. And the Hutu, the Tutsi, Pygmies, they all happy. They were joyful, and they were so happy to see me. Really, remember, it costs us $25. $25, you can give a family the water for life.
That's impressive. So, now, how would someone donate money to your foundation, Gilbert?
There's gazellefoundation.com.
They can offer a donation.
They can offer the nation. We also host a race that you guys can do it. It's in October. It's the best race here, 10 miler, called Run for the Water. That's another way you can participate. It's the best race. It's been voted the number one race here in Austin, even in Texas, 10 miler.
That's great. You know, we trained some people for a 10-mile race when was it? It was September, Erica?
No, it was October.
Okay, so I trained a group of runners for a 10-miler, and you know it was pretty cool. I mean, we won the race overall, and we dominated the age groups. It was awesome. I like 10 miles. 10 miles is a very cool distance to run. It's not so far that you need to run slow. It's not so far that you're gonna blow your energy stores out. It's just a good. I like it better than a half marathon. I like it better than a 10K.
Yeah, it's a great. It's a great. This one it shows you the beauty of Austin. We're lucky to have the best place in Austin. But whatever you can do to help us to change the life of these people, it would be greatly appreciated. Other than that, you guys, you're awesome. You're my big fan.
Robert, is that the only race you produce?
Yeah, it's enough. That's the only race that the foundation that we really produce, because it's a whole year. It's a whole year event. We grow. This race has grown tremendously. We started with, 1,000 runners. Now we have over 4,500 runners. It's growing tremendously, and because of the growth, it's allowed us to provide more water, to the village of Burundi.
Now, we produce a race, and we're actually looking at eventually producing a series of races around the country. We can connect with you and help to raise some money for your foundation.
Man, now you're talking.
Yeah. No, because, the Natural Running Network, we do clinics, and we teach coaches to teach people. What we try to do is, you've been around long enough, and with your background, even in this country, a lot of very high-spirited people that are enthusiastic about running take the responsibility to be the coach, where maybe they don't really have coaching talent. They're very accountable. They'll show up, and they'll make sure people show up, and they try to keep them encouraged. But they're not really educating as well as they could, and they don't have the ability to help people when injuries start to show up. And, the things that we talked about earlier, how to teach people to become stronger so they avoid the injuries as they start to take on more and more mileage, especially those that are trying to run marathons. So that's kind of the thing that we're really all about, is developing our coaching network around the country. And our end game, we hope to develop a series of events that people that are tied to us can participate in for less money than is typical. Because, these race fees are getting very expensive around the country.
Oh, yeah. I know.
So we're hoping to do kind of like a Costco style running series where, if you're a member, you pay half, and if you're a non-member, you pay the full yard. I would like one day, maybe through your people, through Alicia or Susan, to discuss possibly getting involved with you guys and seeing if we can help to raise some money for your foundation.
That would be awesome, man. I told you, you're talking, and this is good. I like it.
Yeah. Do you ever get out to California?
California is my favorite. It's my favorite. I would call it a state, because it reminds me. It's closer to Burundi weather. San Diego area.
Yeah.
That's like Burundi.
I started just last week. I just expanded my coaching. I'm now coaching some people doing track workouts at Santa Monica College.
Really?
Yeah, and maybe one day we'll get you out there. You could come run with us. You could share.
I love it.
Sing a tune.
Say it again?
I said, you can sing a tune.
He could teach a song. I want to learn the songs.
I do too. You best let me know when you come out.
I told you I'm Cuban, so I have rhythm. And
I know
so
you do.
I just need the music, man. I need the material.
I will. I promise. Just got me there, and then I'll be interested. Seriously.
Well, we'll set something up. Maybe we'll get a chance to. We're going to connect. I don't know if Alicia told you this, but I wrote an article in a magazine I write for about 2 or 3 years ago about African runners.
Yeah.
And I was asked to write the article because there was a guy, a biomechanist, that wrote this proposition about American marathoners versus the African marathoners, and how he felt that eventually the Americans were going to beat the Kenyans or the African runners, because what we're lacking is just the skill sets. And I said, you know what, at the end of the day, the American runners are too soft, and they don't have the motivation that the African runners have to win these events, because when an African runner wins a marathon, he feeds a village. When an American runner wins you know, he goes home. He might not even, he may come up short because he just wasn't motivated that day. And I just said the socio-economical issues that these Africans bring to play with their training is far too motivating, far too powerful for them to let somebody beat them. So I didn't believe that they could win. But anyway, the short story was I promoted your book in that article, and I used the cover picture from your book in that article as well. That's how I found you, by the way.
Oh, really?
That was a couple years ago. So we've been destined to meet.
Yeah, that, you crack me up, man. This is awesome. This is awesome. You know, I also want to tell you something you take away. It's kind of an inspirational. It goes along with what you were talking about. When we were kind of trying to come to America, you know, we would be like a group of 10, 15 guys are training really, really hard. I remember, I'll give you an example. Coaches gave us 10 times 1,000, and he wanted us to run 250 to 253. You know what pace it is?
4.5?
Yes. So the bottom line was, in the middle of the workouts, kids would go, you know, build a house. Do you know the term build a house?
Yeah.
Building a house. Do you know what that means?
No.
So, anyway, do you know how much, like, when those guys win races, either New York, Boston, London, Berlin, all this big money, do you know what they do with the money?
They buy cows.
And?
Houses.
They build houses. Okay, they build big houses. So there was a time when now we become an inspiration. When the kids are training hard, they'll be like, they'll be, sorry to say it on the radio, they'll be vomiting, okay? Yeah. And then instead of coaching coming and say, oh, sorry, kids, how you doing? They're like, build a house, 2 stories, 3 stories. Because you know what? All these guys, they work so hard, and if you don't puke during a workout, you would never get there. So it becomes an inspiration. When you see someone doing that, they call build a house. I just have to tell you that. Because,
yes.
What?
So I'm going to use that. I'm taking creative license. So next time I see somebody throwing up, I say, oh, you're building a house.
Yes, build a house. 2 stories, 3 stories, yes. That's I use that a lot.
Air conditioning.
That's
awesome.
That's great.
Awesome. Well, listen, Gilbert, first of all, I want to wish you the best of holidays to you and your family.
Yeah.
When do you guys celebrate Christmas?
You mean in Burundi?
Yeah.
We celebrate it on Christmas, and it's different Christmas. Here, Christmas is about gift, it's about giving. If you didn't give someone, they get, you know, they feel that you don't love them. So for us, Christmas, it was about going to church, it's about wearing some kind of new clothes. They go crazy on New Year. New Year, they would go crazy. That's a really celebration. Here, it's the opposite. Christmas is big. It's big back in Africa, but it's more like going to church, attending those midnight mass, and then that's about Christmas. And wearing, yeah. And also get a chance to eat a new food, you know, something new you haven't eaten before. And it's celebrating on a Christmas day. It's on a Christmas.
Well, anyway, I just want to make sure that you know that we're very pleased to have had you today. And there's going to be, there'll be several thousand people that are going to hear this interview with you. And I hope that affects your foundation and it does some good for you because you have a tremendous amount of purpose, my friend. And one day we're going to meet.
Just remind them, I'm not trying to promote anything. It takes $25. Think about what you can do with $25 to give a family for life.
That's amazing. I'm putting my $25 in as soon as I get off the phone.
Richard, thank you so much for this opportunity. Yeah. As you said, we will meet again.
All right. Well, Richard, I think it's getting close to time to close the show. Gilbert, you have a wonderful weekend. And again, the best to you and your family. And I want you to send some love to your runners from us, okay?
I will.
All right.
Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network. Drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.